Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Divine Goddess Radio. I'm your host, Beth Jacobson, along with Marie Langley, but I will be the only one who's here tonight. Marie is out of town. We created this show as a venue to discuss many facets of healing, shifting, and spirituality, and we have discussions on various topics, and we'll feature many guests, including healers, psychics, mediums, and speakers. You can find our show on Sundays from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. We also have a midweek Stress Buster show on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. You can also follow our show on Blog Talk Radio by clicking on the follow button and check out our blog at divinegoddessradio.wordpress.com. And our email address is divinegoddessradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback and insight that you have on our show. You can reach Beth at 651-900-4136 or Marie at 651-303-0555. And you can also download our shows as a podcast using the iTunes or RSS speed buttons on our Blog Talk Radio page. And we'd also like for you to go into the Facebook page and search for Divine Goddess Radio. Our chat room will be open for any questions, so those of you who have any questions, feel free to type in, or you can call 347-327-9360 if you would like to talk to our speaker tonight. And tonight we have Gabriel Broughton Lee. He is a successful entrepreneur, a veteran of the armed forces. He's an advanced higher brain living facilitator and national presenter. He's descended from a lineage of spiritual teachers, and Gabriel has journeyed from a traditional Christian upbringing to the brink of atheism, and finally to a profound spiritual awakening that's rooted in science and his experience with higher brain living. And he's passionate about human potential and spirituality, as well as music, writing, and film. And tonight we're going to talk about sacred geometry and science. And welcome, Gabe.
Thank you, Beth. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem whatsoever. I am just so looking forward to you talking about sacred geometry and science. So I guess, you know, since your biography says that you're a successful entrepreneur, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. After I graduated college and got out of the military and moved back from L.A., kind of all at the same time, and so I was very much in a place of, well, what's the next step? And I had actually worked in cell phone sales the whole time I was in college, and so I had sort of accumulated all this experience, and I thought, well, I suppose I might as well do something with all of this experience, and you know, I had a friend that had opened a cell phone franchise called Wireless Zone. And so I started talking to him, and I actually worked at a store for a year just kind of learning the ropes and figured, hey, this is something that I can do. So I went for it. And because I'm a veteran, it was a little bit less challenging to get approved for an SBA loan. And so I opened a Verizon franchise in Maplewood, Minnesota, and that was about a little over 2.5 years ago, and so it's still going strong. So,
well, good, 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 good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a question for you. Can you tell us a little bit more about your experience in the military? What was that experience
Absolutely.
Like?
Well, it was, you know, I was fortunate. I had a pretty good experience in the military, and when I initially signed my contract in 2001 with the Army National Guard, I originally intended to become a pilot or a medic or both. I had aspirations to become a doctor eventually, and I thought that there were some pretty good avenues to the military that I could finance my medical education with, and I thought becoming a pilot would be thrilling and very fun. So I originally got in to do one or both of those things, and unfortunately, well, or maybe fortunately, when I got in and did my initial physical, I found out that I was colorblind. I was red-green colorblind, and according to my recruiter, that meant that disqualified me from being a medic or a pilot. And so I just said to him, I said, well, I'm going to be going to school in the Twin Cities. Just give me something that's easy to do that I could do in the Twin Cities. And so we decided that I'd become an HR person in the military. And so for the 8 years, I was in the Guard. You know, you do 1 week in a month and 2 weeks out of your summer, and it helped pay for my education, you know, and I got a chance to serve my country, so to speak. And you know, because of the profession that I chose in the military or ended up in, I actually wound up meeting a really, really great group of people. The people that were in my unit and that I found myself surrounded by were really great. And so, I mean, that's half the battle right there, is just, you know, working with people that you genuinely enjoy. And I did do one tour overseas in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. I was actually stationed in Kuwait and in Qatar, which left me largely out of harm's way, and I was in charge of overseeing basically the human resources aspect of some of the units that were deployed there from Minnesota. So just, you know, working with people's insurance, emergency record data, awards, promotions, legal actions, certain medical records, things. And so, you know, it kept me out of combat and harm's way. And so I got out in 2009, and I would say the most significant thing about it is when I was overseas and deployed in the desert, I think that's when I really started feeling the first rumblings of the spiritual awakening that I'm going through right now. And I can go more into that if you'd like. Or...
Well, you know what? Because when I was reading off your little bio here that you descended from a lineage of spiritual leaders, what do you mean by that, a lineage of spiritual leaders?
Well,
can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. My family, several generations of my family have all been directly working in the spiritual field. I mean, primarily in the Christian worldview of things. And my great-grandfather on my mom's side, he was a missionary in Madagascar, Africa.
And, oh, wow.
And so my grandfather was raised in Madagascar in the mission field. And so, of course, you know, being entrenched in that, he wound up returning to Madagascar after actually going through World War II and getting his degree in the School of Divinity that he got. And then, so he returned there, subsequently raised my mom in Madagascar. And so my mom was raised in the mission field, as was my uncle, and they both went on to become Lutheran pastors. And on my dad's side, of course, my grandpa was also a pastor, a Lutheran pastor, and my father followed in those footsteps as well. Lots of pastors, and the uncle that I mentioned earlier, after he decided to become a medical doctor. And so there's sort of that healing aspect to it, too, that we have a doctor and also two nurses. And so, yeah, just kind of a really strong sort of spiritual upbringing, I can say safely.
Well, that's interesting, because that just goes into leading into, in your bio, you said that there was a brink of atheism that finally led you to your spiritual awakening. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that was definitely when I claimed my spiritual beliefs as my own. And I noticed as when I was about 23 or 24, I'm 30 years old now, but when I was 23, I started gaining a better understanding of sciences like biology and psychology and neurology and things like that. And sort of as that was happening, I was also growing more and more aware of certain issues that I took with some of the teachings that I had been brought up with, and started calling into question certain aspects of the literature, the Bible, and what didn't add up and what seemed to be inconsistencies. And so I got really, really kind of focused on these details, and my analytical side was going, well, this doesn't make sense, and you know, just that whole thing. And,
a lot of
questioning. Really, yeah, a lot of questioning. And sort of, I think, ultimately, reacting to sort of these exclusionary stances, that there's only this one way to do things, and that there are bad consequences or outcomes for those that don't find this specific route. And that really troubled me. And of course, shortly after I was overseas, I was about 24 when I went overseas, and I had a lot of time to do some of this research at night, and I was reading a lot, and I read The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins, which was brilliant, and also The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, and he gave voice to a lot of the concerns, sort of analytical concerns that I was coming up with. And so I started saying, "Wow, am I an atheist? You know, is this what I'm sort of realizing?" And I started flirting with that, you know, and kind of stepping into that idea. But I found myself suffering more and more, and I felt very distant from God. And I think it's what some referred to as the dark night of the soul, where I felt very distant from God, and just questioning a lot of things and really feeling a lack of purpose. And it was sort of like staring into an abyss, like of materialism, like that really, is this all there is? Is this what this is all about? And I could really start to relate to people who are, you know, sort of depressed and sort of doom and gloom about the state of the world, because, you know, when you have that mentality and you look at around at all the things that are happening in the world, it can be very disconcerting and very crushing.
I think it is. I think it's really important, and I think it's wonderful that you're on here and you're speaking of that, especially, you know, from a male's perspective of saying, you know, that you've been questioning all this stuff, because a lot of people who connect with Marie and I, you know, will sit here and say that there's a lot of individuals who are lost. They feel like they're looking for something, but they're not quite sure. They're wanting more meaning in their life. And then, you know, and you want to talk a little bit more about that, the dark night of the soul? Is that what you called it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's
just so, because that's, like I said, there's people who come on here and there's individuals who are coming on to this radio, this blog radio, and they're just like, we don't know why I was directed to this, but you know that, you know, you and I both know that was divine guidance. So for them to,
yes,
if you could describe it a little bit more, you might be just ringing the truth to many individuals where they're going, oh my God, this is just what I needed to hear. So if you wouldn't mind talking a little more in depth on that, I would love to hear more.
Absolutely, because I can relate. You know, I was there, and it's a very depressing and sort of disillusioned place to be. And what I ultimately concluded was that it was a lack of information. You know, a lot of today's culture and a lot of the scientific community is really embracing this sort of materialistic view of things, that you can reduce all of this amazing creation that we're a part of to some sort of, you know, mechanical, material activity, and that's it. You know, that we're just sort of the sum of our physiological parts and our thoughts and our emotions. And, you know, I mean, to some extent, you know, those are some fundamental parts of the human experience. Absolutely, but it goes deeper than that, and it's much, much broader than that. And fortunately, there are some bright lights in the scientific community that are speaking up and speaking out about all kinds of really, really interesting, fantastic scientific studies that are doing, like in the fields of quantum physics and neurology, that are showing that it's much more than that. And so, absolutely, I can relate to the person that doesn't feel their purpose, doesn't understand why they feel this sort of impending sense that something's wrong. And I think a lot of people are perhaps in that state and may not even know it.
Oh, yes, exactly, exactly. Well, you know, since you're talking about this, I think it's a perfect segue. You know, science seems to have played a very strong role in your spiritual awakening. So why do you suppose that is?
Well, because that's a great question. I think a lot of science really really looks at the world through a pretty narrow scope, meaning that science tends to look at things that can be measured, quantified, empirically measured, and reviewed by other peers. And to some extent, you know, that's good. I mean, it's good to be able to find something solid and concrete to stand on, to find truth. But I think Deepak Chopra says it best when he says that science fails to basically, I'm going to butcher this, but he says that science basically fails to include the observer into the equation. The fact that the measures are being taken by somebody who is conscious. And therefore, the observer of whatever they're measuring can be biased. Their views can be skewed according to, you know, their own personal experience, their circumstances, their geographical location, whichever way you put it. So the really interesting scientific fields that started coming into my awareness were that of psychology and neurology and quantum physics and also biology, of course, and how those things all kind of interrelate. And as I got into this information, I mean the notion that we're all observers and that consciousness is the fundamental key in the human experience, I mean that really caught my eye.
Can you explain a little more in depth what you mean by that consciousness? For those,
absolutely.
I mean, I get where it is that you're coming from, but for somebody who is, this is completely all new. It's like, you know, the language is just new to them. So would you be able to explain that a little bit more about the consciousness of?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, well, I think I heard it put best yesterday, actually, and that was notice the noticer. Meaning that you can draw your awareness back a step, and so you can look at things around you and say, well, these are my friends, these are my family, those they belong to me, they are mine, right? They appear to you as separate, and therefore they are yours. And then, but if you draw your awareness closer, then you say the same thing about your body. Well, this is my body, I can observe it, but I'm observing it, and it appears to be separate from me, so that's not me. And then you draw it in closer, and you say, well, how about emotions? Emotions are something that I experience, but again, you're experiencing them, and so they appear to be separate from you. They're not actually you. And then you can draw it even closer into your own thoughts. And you can actually detach from being caught up in your emotions and your thoughts, and you can simply observe them and witness them. And though they appear to be apart from you, and they must not be you, you're left with a silent observer. The part of you that, no matter what the circumstances, never changes. So if you think back a couple hours ago, or you think back a couple days ago, or a couple years ago, or way back to when you were a little child, you know, the experiences and the emotions that you've had in time can vary widely. But the silent observer is always there. And if you can focus on that and draw your attention to that as what's called a second attention, that's when you're getting a feel of what consciousness actually is, the experience of being alive. And witnessing.
Wow.
Hopefully that makes sense.
That is an excellent, excellent explanation, just so you know, Gabe. Love it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank
love
you.
It. So, you know, with that, it's also, you know, you're into sacred geometry. So what is sacred geometry in? I mean, what is it about? And how does that go with science?
Yeah, sacred geometry is really a great stepping stone for any analytical mind who's taking a sort of analytical or scientific approach to their spirituality, like much the same way that I did. And I think Charles Gilchrist is somebody that I've followed and studied, watched on YouTube, and he's an artist who's really big about sacred geometry, and many of his pieces of art are based directly on it and are actually designed to engage the viewer and sort of open up these ideas in the viewer's mind, and really, really fantastic pieces of work and great YouTube videos, Charles Gilchrist. And he defines sacred geometry as the creator's conceptual architecture out of which all things precipitate. Now, to me, that's a fancy way of saying that basically that everything that we witness can be counted, measured, quantified to some degree, not necessarily with a scientific tool, but you can number things. And basically this idea that everything can be measured on a geometric scale, the size, the number, the length, the color spectrum, it can all be assigned a number. And that's why mathematics works in the world, why it works so amazingly and consistently well, why we can take numbers and patterns and sort of assign them into these different equations and algorithms, and they produce results that are reliable and verifiable. And when you gain that fundamental understanding that we live in a mathematical or geometrical world, then it becomes sort of this phenomenon of pattern recognition, and that I personally think that's one of the hallmarks of the human experience is being able to recognize patterns, complex
yeah.
patterns, and
mm-hmm.
and base your behavior and experience on those. And so sacred geometry sort of springs out of that idea that there's this mathematical world, and that there are certain patterns that emerge in nature that are absolutely beautiful and brilliant, and that we can explore. We can explore using a rational mind and a two-dimensional plane, and you can work with these sacred geometries. I can explain it to the listener conceptually, and it's even much more challenging to do that without a visual aid, right?
Can you give like any examples? Like, I get where it is that you're coming from, because sacred geometry is everywhere. Everything that we can see, everything that we can't see with our physical
yes.
eyes.
Yes.
So would you be able to give, like, trees have sacred geometry, we have sacred geometry, everything has sacred geometry. Would you be able to get a little more in depth on that? And if not, don't be afraid to say, Beth, I'm not quite sure, you know, so.
Well, I can definitely give it a try. And like
okay.
I said, it's,
okay.
it's tough to do without visual aids, but I definitely recommend to anybody that's listening and this catches any interest at all to YouTube anything you can about sacred geometry and actually start working with it. You know, get some graph paper and get a compass and start exploring some of these concepts on your own, because it's going to open up in a way that simply can't be done through just
mm-hmm.
spoken or written word. But it really boils down to a very simple relation amongst geometric patterns, and probably the most simple and basic and all encompassing is the circle, right?
Yeah.
And you take a circle, and a perfect circle, and there's the center point of the circle, and if you move the edge of a circle over that center point, you've got two circles that are intersecting each other. And in the middle is what's called a vesica pisces. And so through the vesica pisces is a wealth of an astonishing wealth of information. It seems like such a simple concept, but you can actually discover amazing properties of light just using that vesica pisces alone. And I won't go into too much detail, but I'd say light is about as fundamental as you can get.
Yes.
So right there, you know you're striking goal, right?
Yes.
And again, without a visual aid, if you can start drawing these circles that intersect at these key points around it, what starts to emerge is these simple but elegant structures that are known as the seed of life. And if you expand it more, it becomes the flower of life. And even more than that, working with it specifically, you have the fruit of life. And from there emerges Metatron's cube, when you sort of get the masculine straight lines and angles involved. Then you have the merging of female and energy mathematical relationships, and the Metatron's cube emerges through which, without getting too technical, the five platonic solids emerge. And just to give you an idea of the implications of that, basically every element on the periodic table, everybody's seen it from high school chemistry, right? Every element from that periodic table of elements can be traced to these five platonic solids. And that was discovered in the 80s. So basically what you're getting is sort of this idea that these geometrical patterns emerge in nature, and you see that in the sunflower and in the swirlings of galaxies or the swirling of pools. And I guess everywhere you look around you, you're going to see sacred geometry in some shape or form.
Oh yes, I just love the way you explained it. I absolutely love it. So you would say that sacred geometry, just to reiterate what you said, you would say it goes in the category that it is a form of science, correct?
Science, geometry, mathematics, I would say specifically. But, yeah, that lends itself to science. It's just dealing with numbers and quantifiable data. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, now this might be a question that just completely you're not prepared for, but why do you think sacred geometry was created? Do you think it was created from the very, very get-go, when all was created from the point of creation, or do you think it just is something that, you know, accumulated over time and it just metamorphosed into what it is now? What is just your belief system on it?
I really think that it's the scaffolding or the architecture from the Charles Gilchrist quote. That to me rings the truest, that it was there, that this reality that we're a part of emerged upon the architecture that is sacred geometry. And to be honest, it's only one component of it. There's actually, I've heard it stated that there's 13 systems. There are 13 systems that you can learn that are absolutely fundamental to our experience, and sacred geometry is just one of those 13. But yeah, it was there, and it's what this was designed in. It's kind of like the Matrix, if you think about it.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Oh, I love it. I could just sit here and have a conversation about it, let me tell you. So I'm just going to skip over to, like, what personal changes or evolutions would you say that you've witnessed, you know, just on your journey alone? What have you, you know, where you're able to sit here and look at, what are your personal changes and the evolution that you've witnessed within yourself from where you started from to where it is that you're now?
Oh, well.
Would you be able to put it like in words and explain it so that, because there is a reason for my questions to lead into, you know, what we'll talk about
absolutely
a little bit later. So.
Yeah. I, you know, I think about my time since the dark night of the soul when I was 24, 25, and overseas, and felt so separate and isolated and hopeless and purposeless. And I was very hyper aware of the problems in the world and just felt absolutely powerless to do anything about it. A disconnected state and a feeling as if I, as if this is it, this is all there is to this. I mean, what's the deal here? And really the majority or the really profound changes have occurred in just the last year, literally almost the last year to the date. But what I didn't realize at the time when I started making these scientific inquiries and sort of digging into this information, that I didn't understand why I was interested in it. I just thought I was kind of an information junkie and that this was like one of my hobbies, you know, and you know, I had a lot of things going on and that this is just what I did in my downtime for some odd reason. But what I didn't realize is that it was absolutely part of the process. It was part of the spiritual process. And even if you don't realize it's happening, in hindsight, it's clear as day. And I was gaining all this information on these different fields. And And so really I think it all boils down to a complete reversal of all those characteristics that I listed earlier. I mean, I feel more hopeful, connected, alive. I feel such a strong sense of purpose. I feel an incredible elation for the excitement of what's to come. The world's absolutely in a troubled state right now, and there's certainly a lot of things that are going on that we could do better as a species. And I have every hope that we can and that we will. And
what would you like to see this species, you know, our species, what would you like to see? What do you think we could do better?
Oh, well, pretty much everything. I think it's the Einstein quote that says that you can't solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it. And
exactly.
It is very clear that we've seen sort of incremental leaps forward in the human experience and in consciousness, and that it's led to improved conditions. The latest wave being the fifth epoch of human development that has brought in all these great values, you know, civil rights, women's suffrage, more recently, gay rights, and this cause and this concern for people that have absolutely no, you know, relation to necessarily, not even geographical relationship. So you can see that human progress is moving in the right direction, but that there's sort of a lot of systems in place that aren't effective. And I think that the main thing is that I think that if everybody sort of learns that consciousness is in the present and the now, it is really, really, truly what matters, and that if we can sort of stop, you know, judging our past and worrying about the future and causing all this fear and anxiety amongst us and sort of these competitive attitudes, like if you take something, there's less for me and we are in competition and we need to survive and we're all in this on our own. No, I would love to see a sort of an awakening to this unity consciousness where everyone understands that we're all in this together. I mean, truthfully, to the core, it's a beautiful concept and it's lovely to, you know, write songs about and all that good stuff. But if people really, really grasp that at a fundamental level, there's this emergence of compassion and love that can't be contained and that spreads and, you know, through energy fields. And it's this collective sort of uplifting of everyone's coming together. And I don't know if that answers the question. It's very, I think, sort of generalized, but I think that if everybody can sort of recenter on love and connectedness, and that it'll have a very, very strong positive effect on not just our species, but of course the entire planet and everything that's a part of it.
I think that's huge. I don't think that's general whatsoever. I think that is the message that people need to hear. It's, you know, and you're not saying this, but I'm saying it's, folks, it's time to wake up now. It's time to come out of that slumber, and it's time to step up to the plate and, you know, look at, you know, possibilities, endless possibilities, and to be able to look at all situations with compassion and empathy. And it's a time to really, you know, enhance that unconditional love and acceptance. And, I mean, there's so much that people can sit here and do differently, and I can't wait till we are all there 100%.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a ways
mm-hmm.
to go yet, and you are a bright light, Gabe. You are a bright light, so I just love the fact that you are on your path and you're doing the work that you're doing now. So with that, just when there's people who are sitting here saying, but you know what, I'm too far gone, because I've heard people say that I'm too far gone, you know, and this is, you know, this is to me part of the dark night of the soul, because you're sitting here and what's real, what isn't real, what have I been taught, what does society say, what is it that I really truly believe in? But you know, the thing is, don't you agree that today can be the first day that you can start your life and do something differently, no matter what you've done in your past, no matter what?
Absolutely. And Beth, thank you, by the way, and I think you are a brilliant light as well, and this is great, the work that you guys are doing and sort of getting people talking about this and educating people. It's a beautiful thing. And
exactly.
Absolutely, you don't even need to go to sleep for it to be the moment that you change. You know, a lot, it's so much of it is simply breaking the pattern of behavior, the natural sort of path of least resistance that we all fall into. Like, what's the easiest thing to do? What's going to require the least amount of energy? You know, kind of leaning us towards our baseline sort of survivalistic urges. I mean, we're better than that. As a species, we're destined for more than that. We have a purpose. There's a reason for everything. And the thing that really astonished me, I think, that everything that I'm learning about spiritual awakening and personal growth and evolution is that it's so simple. It doesn't require you to jump through hoops. It's just almost a simple change in perception and sort of
Well, you know, just on that note, what would you say to somebody who might be really stuck in the old ways of their thoughts, the way they're looking at something and the way that they're seeing things? What would be the feedback that you would give to somebody?
There are a lot of things that one can do. Something that really, really worked for me was just realizing that my brain was meant to be used by me. I'm not just sort of this, you know, reaction to anything that's happening around me, and like, you know, I have to react in these cultural prescribed ways. It's simply a matter of just learning how to sort of notice your thoughts and notice your emotions. And one thing that's been incredibly effective for me, here's a great one, is any time that you feel a very strong and negative emotion, automatically a red flag should go up. There's something inside you should say, hold on a second, what do I need to take another look at here? How does getting upset about this serve me, right? And it sort of becomes not this question anymore of like, well, this person wronged me, or this circumstance that's out of my control is happening and it's outside of anything that I can do about it, and it's frustrating me. That's a natural thing to feel. But it's also your choice to decide how you want to react to that situation.
And that it
Meaning,
is. That it is.
It's a decision to get angry about something. It's a decision to continue to indulge those types of thoughts. And not that it's unnatural or that it's something that it isn't natural to do, but just sort of if you can, once you're aware of that, once you know that, oh, I'm feeling a strong negative emotion and it's a choice to continue down that path, how can I sort of think about this from another angle so that I can twist it into a lesson, something that I can learn? And so it really just comes down to just a fundamental new approach to the way that you experience things, you think about things and feel emotions about things.
So, you know, with that, you do what is called higher brain living. Can you talk some more about that? What the technique is about and what does that all involve?
Higher brain living was absolutely essential to the massive expansion that I've experienced in the last year, because it was exactly almost a year ago to the day that I attended my first higher brain living presentation. And not only saw what happens with the person that was getting into their higher brain and what I knew about the neurology behind it, and I knew that was correct, but it was what I felt. And I felt whatever it was, the energy or the essence of the room change and become much more lighter and positive. And higher brain living is a great vehicle for an analytical mind, because it is science-based. It talks about, it's basically a method that allows you to shift blood flow, oxygen, metabolism, whatever you want to call it, out of our survival-based lower brain into our higher brain, which is where we experience, it's the part of the brain that lights up when we experience joy and connectedness mm-hmm. and love and purpose. And so a lot of people are just getting sort of caught up in the survival mode. And and kind of interpreting everything that's happening in their life as something that they need to stress out about and respond to in sort of a hypervigilant way. And, and so higher brain living sort of just gets you out of that. It doesn't do away with it because we all need to hang on to our survival instincts, but it allows you to be more in that joyful, purposeful way of being. And, you know, since I've started it and gone through my 22 sessions and then gone on to become a facilitator and a national presenter for Higher Brain Living, and I've gone to the Cosmic Consciousness Retreat that was this year in Costa Rica with Dr. Michael Cotton, it was, you know, just truly amazing. There really aren't any words for it to the level that it can take you to. But there's no potential. There's unlimited potential.
I was going to say, you know, what?
the complete opposite. there's unlimited potential in these parts of our brain that we're barely using at all. And that, to me, as an analytical science-thinking person, is really exciting. And the experience that follows is just something that you really have to experience.
Well, you know, what is a Higher Brain Living national presenter? You said you were a national presenter, so what does that mean?
National presenter meaning that I go around the country setting up presentations and talks and educating people about higher brain living, how it works, and inspiring people to become higher brain living facilitators themselves. And so, directly participating in the emergence of higher consciousness in humanity.
So what would you say, what sets higher brain living apart from, you know, any other spiritual practices or, you know, other modalities that are being used out there by others?
I don't like to compare to other modalities. I mean, certainly every modality has its purpose and its benefits. And the great thing about higher brain living is that it really enhances any positive effects that you're having from other modalities that you're engaging with. But the really big thing about it is that, as far as I know, it's the only modality that purports to directly increase metabolism in the prefrontal cortex, in the most evolved part of our brain. And it does it so reliably and so quickly over a short period of time that the effects are profound and undeniable. And so it's not something that requires any type of, you know, any type of difficult visualization or any sort of meditation experience. And of course, those are good. I do them myself. I'm not discounting them at all. But I'm saying, for a person to just be able to lay down on a massage table and we make some light contacts along their spine at the base of their skull and other parts of their brain, or other parts of their body, and all of a sudden they're experiencing this increase in oxygen and blood flow to the most evolved part of their brain. I mean, it just works fast and very effectively.
Well,
and the community of people that are involved in it are just amazing people. It's a great thing to be a part of. I'm a very, very lucky, blessed person.
Do you think this work is really necessary for the world right now, especially, you know, I think it's a poignant point that we are just energetically right now, because there's so much going on just since this year and just this past week, the energies that are amping up and increasing. Do you think the work that you're doing with the Higher Brain Living is really vital, the work that you would do with your clients right now? And
absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, that is the big picture goal of Higher Brain Living, is to bring about this shift in human consciousness and what's referred to as the sixth epoch of human development, which is going to be greater than the sum of all the epochs of development that came before us. It absolutely plays a fundamental part in getting people to that level and directly addressing the state of the world, because I don't think it's any secret that we need to take action, that there are massive environmental problems and problems with famine and disease and war and poverty, that everything that we've tried thus far is not working and seems to be, in fact, exacerbating what's going on. Not that people aren't doing good things in the world, But like I said, that goes back to that Einstein quote that you can't solve a problem from the same level of consciousness that created it. And I just think that people really need to have a solid footing of scientific understanding to feel comfortable with it. Because, you know, not everybody naturally is awakening on their own, and they may have questions or whatever it is, but this sort of makes it more accessible, I think, to even the science or analytical minds out there, which I think is effective.
Exactly. So would anybody be able to do this? And you would recommend 22 sessions for somebody who started doing the higher brain living, you know, a session with you? Would you say that's the recommended amount of sessions that one would have to? Okay, 22. And so just anybody, no matter where they are, starting out, those who are more advanced, anybody would be able to do the higher brain living.
Anybody would be able to do it, and because it is directly a physiological response to stimuli that we're doing. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't appeal more to a person who's going through an awakening or is aware of certain scientific or spiritual understandings. It would definitely, there's a demographic of people that it would appeal to, but anybody could do it. And the 22 sessions is the average number of sessions that it takes a person to fundamentally shift the brain activity from the lower brain into the higher brain. And so, absolutely, anybody could and should.
Well, you know, I find it really interesting, just because part of what we're talking about today is science and sacred geometry. You and I both know 22 is a master number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that there's 22 sessions. Is there a correlation there? I mean, I find that really interesting, 22 sessions to be able to shift the consciousness.
You know, that's a great question.
Do you have any comments?
I think that Dr. Cotton is the person who created Higher Brain Living. He's an amazing, amazing guy. And part of me says that he is science-y and that he worked with it for, you know, he developed it for almost 30 years. And
really?
I'm sure that there's a scientific bent to it that says, yes, 22 is the average number that it takes a person to get there. But I also know him, and he's very much coming from a higher consciousness perspective, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if the master number he smiled upon as it sort of came about. So I guess I can't say for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised at all.
So do you have a place where people could call you, and is there a website that people could contact you if they're interested in having some sessions with you to experience them?
Oh, absolutely. The best way to reach me would be at my email address, which is Gabriel, G-A-B-R-I-E-L, at higherbrainliving.com. And that's certainly the best way to reach out to me. If you have any further questions about anything we've discussed today, or you're interested in seeing a presentation, getting sessions, further education on higher brain living, and I love to talk about it if you couldn't tell. So please, please don't hesitate to reach out. The higherbrainliving.com website is absolutely there. I know that the leadership of Higher Brain Living is definitely is working to completely revamp the website. And I know that the website that they have currently doesn't feel, they've had it for a short while, and they feel like it doesn't exactly represent the way we are well enough. So they're working on making that more dynamic and more representative of our core values. And I think it's going to be coming out this fall and possibly as early as later this summer. So, you know, that's probably the best way to learn more about higher brain living on the web. But it's such a brand new modality that there's not a lot of information out there, and they're actually lining up studies to sort of get the information out there. And so, but yeah, don't hesitate to reach out to me, folks.
Well, you know, do you have like locations around the area? You're in Minnesota, or do you go into mm-hmm. people's homes, or how does it work? Where would a session take place?
Really, the best experience you can have of higher brain living is at an awakened higher brain living center. And as I said, it's a new modality, so there aren't they're not everywhere. We're working on that. it's come from the Midwest, and there are centers in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, St. Louis, Missouri, I think, and Kansas City. And there are a few others spotted here and there, but actually the next group of people is being trained in it right now, and it certainly is going to be more accessible. But we also, facilitators also function out of normal offices. It's not very often that we do it in a client's home, but, you know,
okay.
We're open-minded people.
Okay. Well, you know, just some people are really comfortable with people coming to their home versus having to go anywhere, you know, especially, you know, moms, dads who are just coming home from work and they have kids and, you know, not having to find babysitters, but at least they can keep the kids quiet on the computer, homework, whatever. So are you also open to, you know, corporations coming in and working with corporations, business corporations?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that that's actually kind of a push that we're doing, is that we would like to make this a part of corporate culture. And,
wouldn't that be wonderful?
I think so. I think if you can get into these companies that can embrace that and make it a part of their culture, it becomes a little bit more normalized and not so kind of scary. You know, I know for a lot of people, some of these ideas are a little bit, I don't know what the word is, but maybe it just don't resonate with them as well. And so we'd love to educate people and help them to understand a little bit more that it's very practical and science-based.
Okay, but I have a question.
With astonishing results.
Okay. That's wonderful. I have a question. Like, if, you know, a session with you, would it entail, as you're working, let's say, with me, does that include, like, a mentoring session with that? So you help me, you know, integrate the information. I'm assuming that I get information in the work that I'm doing, you know, to the extent of, you know, the conclusions that I come up with, understanding and everything. But does a mentoring piece, I don't know if it's mentoring is the word that I want to use, but that's the word that's coming to mind. But is that part of the 22 sessions, is that you talk people through it and the next step, or is it just strictly like hand movements that are done during the sessions with you?
Well, you know, a session is 45 minutes, and I really think one of the more brilliant aspects of it is that we empower a higher brain living client to engage their higher brain on their own. We teach them how to get into their higher brain on their own, and they come up with their own set of resolutions that address the four components of the human experience: your mind, your body, your relationships, and your environment. And they come up with their own resolutions to address each one of those areas and design their life exactly how they want it to be in each of those areas. And to me, that's very empowering. And it's not, and we do absolutely do mentoring. We have conversations with our clients before and after session. We encourage them and help them to figure it out. And we also host meetups. That's a big component of higher brain living, is developing communities and sort of getting people together and sort of getting people in the same energy in the same area, so that we can encourage each other and so people know that their concerns and the things that they're going through are shared, and I think it always helps to have other people to relate to that are going through the same thing that you're going through. So yeah, it really is a great thing to be a part of as a client or a facilitator.
Oh, it sounds wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Well, do you want to talk about, do you have any upcoming events and locations that you're going to be at so somebody could come to a workshop that you're giving? Or how does that work? If somebody had like a group of 10, 20 people and they give you a call, would they be able to call you and say, hey, I got a group of individuals who would love to have a presentation? Or how would that work?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would encourage anyone who is really interested in this, and especially if you have access to a group of people that you think would be interested in, it always helps to have the numbers there to set up a presentation. So, yes, please, if anyone's listening that's interested in bringing together a presentation, we can definitely do that. Our next upcoming presentation is actually this coming week at the Linden Hills Co-op. It's at 7 p.m. I'll be there with one of my colleagues, Maritza Rollenbeck, who I think was on your show pretty recently. And
she was.
Yeah, she's a bright light, isn't she?
She's a bright light also. And folks, you can also go back and get Marita's information also, because she and Gabe do work together. So if you're not able to get the information that you're needing from him, you can also go to Marita also. Let me tell you, we are coming towards the end of our show, Gabe, and I just want to say thank you so much for sharing all of your information. This was absolutely great. I love it. I could sit here and talk to you more in depth about the science and sacred geometry. Absolutely love it, and the higher living stuff. So would love to have you on our show to get more in depth on that. So we'll see where the road takes us. And I just want to wish you luck and wish you well on your journey. And I want to salute you as a veteran and all the veterans out there, and thank you for all the work and the services that you provide, no matter what your role was, you know, in the role that you played in the military. So I just want to thank you so much for taking the time on your Sunday to come and chat. And again, anybody who would like to contact Gabriel, you can go to GABRIEL at higherbrainliving.com, and he would be able to give you any questions. That's his email. So if you have any questions, that would be the way to contact him. I'm also going to put his contact information on our blog, thedivinegoddessradio.wordpress.com. So is there anything that you would like to say before we end this call, Gabriel? Anything? Any lasting words that you would like to, or advice that you would like to give to people?
Well, I'd like to thank you for having me on, Beth. Thanks. It was fun to do this and a great conversation, and thank you for doing what you're doing. You're doing very important work. And to the world, I just send love, light, and blessings. Whoever you are, wherever you are a brilliant light, and you have a purpose, and there are lots of fantastic ways to find it.
Well, thank you, and you are a brilliant bright light yourself, and I appreciate it. So I will talk to you later, Gabe, and we'll talk to you later and say hello to Marita for me.
I will. Thanks again, Beth. Take care.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Yep.
Again,
bye.
Folks, you can follow our show on Blog Talk Radio by clicking on the follow button and check out our blog at divinegoddessradio.wordpress.com, and our email address is divinegoddessradio@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear your feedback on or insight on the show. And you can reach me, Beth, at 651-900-4136 and Marie at 651-303-0555. And you can also download any of our shows as a podcast using the iTunes or RSS feed buttons on our Blog Talk Radio page. And also go onto your Facebook page and search for Divine Goddess Radio. And please like us. Marie and I have a little thing going that the 200th individual who likes our Facebook page, you get a free reading from Marie and I. So we hope that you'll join us next week this week, Wednesday at 3:00 for our midweek stress buster show. And Marie and I send you all love and light, and have a good night, and thank you for being here and listening. Goodbye.